I don't know where to begin this interview because I'm speaking with the man who edited the papers, the memoir, the autobiography of James T. Kirk. And what was it like working with the, did you work with the captain himself?
You know, I'm not gonna buy into this bit. I wrote the fucking book.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast number 458, Captain Kirk's Autobiography. That was Ruth's theme, written by Oscar-nominated Emmy-winning composer Gerald Fried from the original Star Trek series episode Shore Leave. Captain Kirk's old flame Ruth and all of his old flames and roommates and relatives are all mentioned in David Goodman's fantastic new book, The Autobiography of James T. Kirk, which is both an action-packed and surprisingly reflective look back at the life and career of Starfleet's greatest hero. David was in Chicago this weekend, so I got a chance to talk to him about his wonderful new book. There's the autobiography of Malcolm X. There's,
and then written by Alex Haley.
Also, you know, ghostwritten.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now David Goodman has ghostwritten the autobiography of James T. Kirk, the greatest hero of Starfleet, the greatest captain of Starfleet. And you know, as you longtime podcast listeners will by now have completely forgotten that David wrote Federation, the first 150-year history of the United Federation of Planets. You're the biggest nerd I know who's also the best writer. And what?
Thank you. Is that a compliment? I don't know. I guess it is. I'll take it.
It's meant to be. I mean, this book was so enjoyable on so many levels. The best thing I could say about reading the book was that it felt like a fourth season of the original series to me. And I mean that in a good way. Not a fourth season.
I get that. Thank you. Yeah.
Not a fourth crappy season. A fourth really great season, because when you go back through the life of James T. Kirk, you realize there was a lot there in the original series that missed me. I didn't get that. And so your telling of James T. Kirk's autobiography led me back into many, many episodes I had forgotten. Was that the goal, or what was the goal?
Well, the goal is like...
careful of that.
I'm sorry, I'm cleaning a table here during my day job. The goal is to fill in the blanks. The goal is to take what you know as a Star Trek fan, all the episodes you've watched 100 times, and take all those little hints about Kirk's life before he was a captain, and fill them in such a way so that it all connects. It all reads like the story of a man. And so the goal really was to write a book that made it sound like this guy is narrating these events, but that wouldn't piss off fans because it got things wrong.
Right.
And so I had to really kind of walk a line, because I wanted there to be a point to the book, a point of things that he's learning about himself, but it couldn't contradict things we already knew. So that was really the goal, is that how do I write a book of a guy who's like towards the end of his life, as it turns out, and he's looking back and saying, who was I? How did I become this person? How come I couldn't fix the things that were broken? What were the things that were right about my life? And still using Star Trek episodes and making sure that when I told those stories that were familiar to people, that they fit this story.
Well, and it was, I think you succeeded in that, because it felt like every page was action-packed with events from multiple episodes as he kind of went through the history of his life, and yet there was this reflective through line, because supposedly he's writing this in his old age, where he's trying to make sense of the decisions that he made. And the, not the ironic, the weird, fun, meta thing is that you, David, the author, are trying to justify and rationalize a lot of choices that were made by television writers along the way with no hint of an overall autobiography.
Right. That was the hardest part, is because, especially the way the original series was written, there were different writers each week. I mean, the scripts were rewritten by Gene Roddenberry and Gene Kuhn and other story editors on the show, but there were a lot of writers making individual contributions to Kirk's history. It's a very weird, like Ezra, for instance, this was the thing that I sort of call out in the book. Kirk's bully at the Academy's name is Finnegan, and his best friend at the Academy is named Finney. And those names are so ridiculously similar that clearly the person who came up with one name didn't come up with the other. Or if he did, he didn't stop to say, oh, wait, his friend of the Academy was Finnegan. We shouldn't name Finney the bully. We should come up with something else.
And there was no overseer.
There was no overseer, or nobody was paying attention to that kind of detail. So I actually had to make a joke about it in the book. And it's that kind of thing. And there was millions of things like that that I had to try to correct or subtly explain or would have a joke about.
Well, and one of the fun things for me is I consider myself a Trekkie, but not a hardcore one. So, I'm not the kind of Trekkie who completely remembered the difference between Ben Finney and Sean Finnegan.
Right.
So for me, a lot of the book felt new because the book, my wife Dee was gone for the week, and I did what any man does when his wife leaves him and he's home alone. He watches old episodes of Star Trek. And so I watched all these old episodes of Star Trek that I didn't remember as a kid because they weren't interesting to me as a kid.
Right.
They featured Kirk's personal story and not a cool alien.
Right.
Or not a cool story. Did you make up a lot, or was it, or how much would you say you did invent?
Well, the further back you go in his life, the more I had to make up. I mean, there's been very vague references to the fact that he grew up on a farm in Iowa, but there's been no details about that.
Right.
There's been no details about his parents. There's a mention, you see them in J.J. Abrams' movie, but that's only up to a point, and obviously that history is different for true fans. That's not the history of the show. So it's like, who were his parents? What was life like on that farm? And then there is a mention of this disaster on this planet Tarsus IV in the episode Conscience of the King. But that, if you look at how they explain it, it doesn't really make any sense. But if you do any of the math, he was 15 at the time of that. So why is a 15-year-old on this planet? So you've got to explain that. So I'm making up, like, farm in Iowa. I didn't make the farm in Iowa, but I made up the details of what that was like.
Right.
How did he get on Tarsus IV and get involved in that? They don't explain that. They don't even say how old he was in the original series. If you watch that episode, I think you're supposed to believe that maybe he was older. It's a hard thing to, as a, for instance, Starfleet Academy, lots of details about the Academy's constantly mentioning it throughout the series, but what is Starfleet Academy is not something that's really been figured out and explored. So I have to do that. I have to explain Starfleet Academy, but the details of Starfleet Academy, I had to completely make up. Tarsus IV, what happened there, I had to completely make up. The Iowa, and then there are events after the original series, blank spots that I have to explain, that he becomes an admiral, then he goes back to commanding the Enterprise, and then he goes back to commanding the Enterprise. I have to pronounce that correctly. I don't know how I stumbled that word. And then he stops being a captain again and becomes an admiral again, so that he's an admiral again in Wrath of Khan. You have to explain that.
Right.
So there are these, and then there's a mention of this woman he almost married, Antonia, in Generations. Where does that fit in?
Right.
So there's all this stuff that you've got to fit in. And then, in terms of original series stuff, I am doing a lot of, like, sort of encapsulating that, but I also had to add new stuff in there so that it felt like it was more of a story.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Dennehy, otherwise known as Lieutenant Commander Shelby from Star Trek Next Generation. Welcome to the Reduced Shakespeare Company's podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Our fall of 2015 tour continues this week with performances of The Complete History of Comedy Abridged and The Ultimate Christmas Show Abridged in Georgia, Virginia, California, Louisiana, North Carolina, Missouri, and Kansas. And then, next April and May of 2016, we'll perform the official RSC premiere of William Shakespeare's long-lost first play Abridged at the Folger Theater at the Folger Shakespeare Library in Washington, D.C. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. You're pulling from everywhere. You're pulling from the original series. You're pulling from the movies. I think you said to a certain degree, in a couple places, you pulled maybe from some of the novels.
Only sort of slight references, nothing that if I liked it. Okay. I didn't know.
And for the diehard fans, they should know that this is the autobiography of Kirk Classic, right? Not Kirk Cutie, right. Or Kirk Pine, Chris Pine. Right. And yet, I also recently watched the two J.J. Abrams movies, and Chris Pine is a different... he's a different Shatner, he's a different Kirk. But he, particularly in the second movie, he's really struggling with a lot of things that your Kirk in the autobiography is struggling with. Right. Is he making the right decisions? Right. You know, all this sort of thing. I was really strangely, surprisingly moved in places by the book. I really did find it kind of like, oh, this is exactly what I wanted.
That's good.
Yeah.
That was also sort of the... The goal of the book was, the other piece of the book that was really sort of important was in figuring out Kirk's life. In figuring out Kirk's life, you realize that if you take what we find out in Wrath of Khan, that he had a son, you do the math on that, that means he was a dad through the entire original series. And I think as a father and a son, you have to sort of stop and think about that, which is, okay, maybe Carol Marcus didn't want him around because she was worried he was going to go off. Their son was going to go off in space with his dad.
Right.
Still, Kirk is making a decision as a dad. I think if we're going to see him as a real person, he's making a decision, which is I'm choosing work over my son.
Right.
And that's a really important thing to explore, to understand how a guy makes that decision. I don't care that he's the greatest hero who ever lives, you're still sort of abandoning a child. Right. So what is that? And how do you do that? And how do you do that so a fan doesn't read it and say, that doesn't make any sense. That's not Kirk. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, and that was my goal, and I think I hope I succeeded in that.
Well, I'm sure there's going to be some fans who are going to be upset, because we only know about the Kelvin... from the J.J. Abrams movie, right? But in your book, you say he was born on the Kelvin.
I don't say that.
Oh, you don't say that?
I don't say that.
Okay.
I leave it up in the air. I say his parents served on the Kelvin, but if you read it, it could have easily been born on the farm, and I sort of let fans read it the way they want to.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I guess I'm not that big of a nerd then. This is what I'm discovering. Because so much of the book was new to me. Because I also wondered whether you had to be... How versed in Star Trek do you need to be? Right. And I consider myself pretty well versed, but I read the book and clearly I'm not. Because I learned so many things from the book, which was really great. Has the response been positive?
Yeah, no, I've gotten some very good reviews from... you know, sort of geek press, which I'm very happy about, and then lots of reviews online. You know, some people are upset.
Yeah.
Some people don't like even me mentioning the Kelvin, anything from the J.J. movie. They just don't want it even mentioned. My feeling about that opening scene where Kirk is born up to that point, however you feel about Star Trek, it's great. It's great to meet his parents.
It's absolutely great to meet his parents. And also, you have fun. You are sort of, you're irreverent at times. You justify what happened in the fifth Star Trek movie beautifully, in a way that really really I think gives that movie the treatment it deserves.
Right. Well, you know, there were a lot of fans who didn't. I've read a couple of reviews of fans who really were angry about that, but most fans sort of enjoy what I did with that, because it's a tough movie to fit in the in the history of Star Trek, and I like what I did because it told another story. We go back to an old planet from the original series, yeah. and we see something yeah. that probably could have happened. And that's what I liked about it.
No, it was great. You're, as a TV writer, you're trained to write in the different voices of different characters, right. and so you're writing in Kirk's voice throughout. But you also wrote the introduction by Leonard McCoy, right. which I found strangely moving, and then an afterword by Mr. Spock. And those are great, fantastic bookends.
Yeah, well, I really did want that that feeling that, you know, that we're not going to just hear Kirk's voice through this, and they do give that feeling of these guys have lost somebody who's important to them, but that there's also, in Spock's especially, this kind of optimism in right. there that's very Vulcan, but also what the audience wants as well, and what the audience knows, because Kirk... this book ends where Kirk dies in Star Trek Generations in the first part of the movie, and as the audience knows, he comes back later in that movie, comes back to life. Spock doesn't know this, but he has this sort of optimism about it, which I think is kind of cool and fun.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your autobiography via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also engage with us and other fans on Facebook and Twitter, and please post reviews of this podcast on iTunes. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks, as always, to webmaster Matt Rippey, yeoman Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand, and also this week by Star Trek composer Gerald Fried, who won an Emmy for his majestic theme for the TV miniseries Roots, based on the book by, to bring it full circle, Alex Haley. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Gina Martin. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Elizabeth Dennehy, Commander Shelby from Star Trek The Next Generation. Thanks also to Gene Roddenberry for his creation, and to folks like J.J. Abrams and David Goodman for keeping it alive. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 458 1374ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. One of the wonderful moments for me was discovering that on James T. Kirk's first ship, the Republic, he was greeted by a chief petty officer named Titchener. Does this mean that I am now canon?
You're canon until JJ does a movie about the Republic and you're not in it.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.